Welcome back to the Mackham in the Middle podcast after another Sunderland game and unfortunately the last one of the season. A 2-0 defeat in the second leg of the playoff semi-final away to Luton, which of course does mean it is a 3-2 defeat on aggregate for Sunderland, whose season ends there and then. Very shortly we'll get into what happened during the game, a few decisions that possibly went against us and just what it means for Sunderland and the players and the staff and the manager going forward. But before we get into that game, Michael, we've said it a couple of times, you know, in the last few podcasts and basically all season, that whatever happens at the end of the season and whichever game would end up being the last one, it's still an incredible season and there's no other way of putting that.
No, there's not. I have my own opinions on the performance. As you guys know, I was in the group chat and I was probably a bit critical of the players' desire in the first half. And maybe that was a bit harsh. But I still believe we didn't fully want it as much as Luton did, which, and considering we managed to get a point down Kenilworth Road in the league, I know playoff games are different, but I felt we could have done more. But now, despite that, though, you can be nuanced and say that the performance wasn't good enough. But as a whole, the season's been tremendous. I mean, out of 48 games we've had this season, including the playoffs, I could probably count on one hand games I haven't enjoyed watching. Don't get me wrong, the second leg was definitely one of them. But that's an anomaly. Most of the games we've had this season have been really enjoyable. And that's without Ross Stewart, Corey Evans, Ellis Sims getting recalled, Danny Bart, Dan Ballard, Elliot Embleton, Lyndon Gooch. You know, it's a lengthy injury list. And on top of that, you had Alex Neil going. So, and bearing in mind, we came up from League One just about a year ago. Overall, as far as the season goes, I don't think it could have really gone that much better, to be honest.
Yeah. And like Michael says there, James, you know, you get promoted from League One, you finish fifth in the playoffs and, you know, the odds are against you to even stay in the Championship at that point. You then lose your manager, you lose Ross Stewart, you lose Ellis Sims, you lose your captain, you lose essentially your whole back line. Obviously, Sirkin was injured for a long time, Gooch as well, and then all of your centre-halves. For Sunderland's season to have gone down to the second leg of a playoff semi-final is remarkable and that should never, ever be overlooked.
Yeah, it's a ridiculous season, to be honest. As you mentioned, a team coming up from League One has no right to do that, but they did. Given how young they are as well, I think it's a really good achievement. They were fearless at times. I never really felt that Sunderland were outclassed or dominated too often in that Championship season. There was the Stoke game, which was a bit of a write-off. There was the second half of the Burnley game, in which I thought Burnley were just fantastic. Yeah. But when you consider what they've had to deal with, as you mentioned, Alex Neil going, who was a hugely popular figure amongst the players, that was a massive blow at the time. Obviously, hindsight's 2020 and Tony Mowbray's come in and done a fantastic job. But it could have gone the other way from that moment, to be honest, because, you know, that group of players would have been reeling. The fan base was reeling. But Tony Mowbray's come in and completely steadied the ship. And yeah, one of the most enjoyable seasons I can remember as a Sunderland fan. I'm a bit too young to remember the seventh place finishes in the Premier League in their entirety. I was aware of what was going on, but I was so young, I didn't really understand. I didn't watch all of the games. This has been really enjoyable for me. The football, having a mad, you know, Jack Clark's goal against Reading, some of the football that we've played, the stories all over the place, it's been really good.
Yeah. And obviously this is the third kind of playoff situation that Sunderland have been in recent years, John, that obviously hasn't ended in victory. The first one was against Charlton, of course, our first season in League One, and to lose that was painful. The second one was obviously Lincoln, in which we lost in the semi-final. That was painful and embarrassing. Whereas this one, albeit still somewhat painful because of how close we were to, you know, achieving the unthinkable, really, there's none of that feeling this time around. It is just a sense of being happy that we made the playoffs, happy that, you know, we won the first leg of the playoffs and competed into the second leg. There's no hard feeling this time around.
No, you're right. I think last night, you know, when the game finished, I think automatically I went on to sort of judge the whole season and not necessarily just yesterday's game. I think we can look back and be immensely proud on what we have achieved. We've lost out to, you know, the third best team in the league over 46 games who were no slouches. And like James was saying, all the stuff that's gone on this season, we've still managed to be in with a massive shout. you know, I think you can be immensely proud. Like I say, it's one of those you look back on the whole season. You know, I sort of judged it straight away and thought, you know, I've almost forgot that performance and just judged the season as a whole. And I think everybody can be, you know, immensely proud and, you know, and excited as well, sort of going forward, you know, as long as we keep the majority, you know, and keep building. I know there's a lot of up in the air stuff at the moment. But if we can keep the core, then it's obviously, you know, a very exciting time to be a Sunderland fan.
Yeah. And obviously after last night, Michael, there is, like I say, a lot of positives to look back on throughout the season. You know, the development of some of the players. Obviously Pierre Quirre recently, James will like that one, but there's so many other ones who, you know, this is realistically the first season in, you know, professional football. Even Anthony Patterson, I think this is his first season in men's football, obviously playing non-league with, I think it was Notts County last season. But what comes with that sense of pride and, you know, happiness to have reached where we have reached, there is also a lot of frustration in a good way that Sunderland's performance just never really reached the standards yesterday to what, you know, they have been throughout the rest of the season.
Well, exactly. And that was the point I was trying to make. And very quickly before I get on to my main point, I'll join James fully in the Pierre Ekwa fan club because I love the fact that he is now starting to shut people up who wanted to write him off after two games, which I think is absolutely ludicrous.
I'm still a founding member, Michael. You can't take that off me. I'm still a founding member. You can't take that off me. You can be vice
don't
president.
Don't need to. You do that role justice more than I ever would. But you know what? Right. Pierre Ekwa, good. But anyway, no, I mean, that's part of the frustration for me that came from last night because I feel like because Sunderland dealt with Luton's press and their physicality really well in the first leg. And bear in mind, that's at the Stadium of Light where we have struggled this season in comparison to away from. And that's one thing next season that obviously that's the big takeaway that we have to improve next year at home. But again, the criticism in some senses is a good thing because, and I'm pretty sure the players will be doing that themselves now, where we've set the standard so high that any less than that doesn't feel acceptable. Now, again, thankfully, we haven't reached that point too many times. For the most part, we've accepted that there are limitations at the moment with the injury situation, the limitations with the fact that some of these players are younger. But, you know, we have to remember as well, if you're good enough, you're old enough. And there is still experience in that squad. It just means, though, that there's going to be a massive summer to try and plug some of the gaps that are there, which to give Speakman and Harvey a bit of criticism, there is still some there. But overall, as like you said, the frustration comes from the fact that we have set the standards so high. But again, like we've said loads of times, just making the playoffs with all the stuff that's gone on. I mean, it's literally been a season of setback after setback after setback. And okay, last night was frustrating, definitely is, and I won't change my opinion. I'm still, to a little degree, still annoyed that our season ended like that because I would have wanted a better performance. But, yeah. You know, again, but that's like one criticism. That's like one thing we've got wrong out of like 10 things, 9 other things we've got right on a ratio scale. So we've done superbly. I think the players can get themselves away now for a break, which is deserved.
Yeah. And obviously, like I say, James, the performance from Sunderland wasn't the best. And, you know, it was definitely far below par compared to what we've seen recently, especially in an offensive sense. But obviously Luton won the game 2-0. And I think I said it against Watford. I said it against Luton in the first leg and said it again for the second leg, that if a team at this stage in the season are going to hurt us, it's going to be by playing to their strengths, which, you know, is very much our weakness at this point, which is set pieces, crosses, long balls, because, you know, I don't think we had anyone over 5'9" in that defence. Playing last night, and it wasn't the prettiest watch from Luton, and as a neutral it was probably a horrid watch, but it was effective. And you know, they were never going to change the way they were going to play because it was always going to be, you know, successful for them.
Yeah, I agree with almost everything you've said there, and Michael as well. I think you have to say that Sunderland were below par. It was a slightly disappointing performance, but that has to be framed in a context as well of various different factors. I thought Luton, to be honest, were just sublime. I think if you flip that on its head and a Sunderland team does that in a playoff semi-final, you're absolutely delighted. On a lesser sort of scale, I'm thinking maybe Portsmouth away in that playoff semi-final in our first season in League One. That sort of dogged, gritty performance, you know, shithousery for want of a better word. I thought they were magnificent, Luton, to be honest. They had a game plan, they stuck to it. They were well coached by Rob Edwards. They made adjustments from the first legs, and you know, the desire, the work rate, the way they mobilised the crowd, I think if Sunderland do that or produce that sort of performance, even though it's not great to watch on the eye, you know, you're absolutely delighted because they've dug in, they've made the absolute most of every advantage they can, and it's clearly worked for them. It's no secret that Sunderland have a lot of tall players injured, so that means they have to field a lot of small players, and Luton Town are a team of absolute giants, so that was always gonna hurt Sunderland. We've seen it in past weeks, it's hurt Sunderland. Sometimes they've managed to negate it, sometimes they haven't. But the cold, hard fact of the matter is that that defence is really short, and Luton's forward line was really tall. So I think you have to cut them some slack on that. I also just think they were knackered. When you lose a big game like this, there's always the odd accusation of bottling it or not turning up, or the occasion got to them. Perhaps the occasion did get to them a little bit. I'm not really sure I saw it that way, because I think they handled the crowd at the Stadium of Light really well, Sunderland players, for arguably one of the first times this season. Thinking of maybe the Blackburn Rovers games and the Middlesbrough games as well. I don't think it was necessarily the Kenilworth Road crowd or the tightness of the pitch or any one factor or them bottling it or not turning up. I just think it was a myriad of things. Luton just wanted it. They were all over the place. The desire, and I just think Sunderland were a bit knackered as well. It's been a long, grueling season. The injuries have really taken the toll. You're looking at, you know, Christ, the matches played this season, and you do have to do this as a professional, but for me, it's the lack of depth perhaps in the squad below these players that I'm going to list. But Jack Clark, 50 matches played this season. Dan Neal's the same. Anthony Patterson's the same. Patrick Roberts has played 48. O'Nine's 46. Diallo down to 43, Pritchard 43. They were all on the pitch for Sunderland, and yeah. I just think it was one game too far. Perhaps a bit of an experience showed as well. I agreed with what Mowbray said. We could have done with Corey Evans in the middle. And if we'd have had a tall, you know, fit striker like an Ellis Sims or a Ross Stewart, somebody that you can hit, I think that really, really would have helped Sunderland tactically. Mowbray was entirely limited with what he could do off the bench. Three at the back, four at the back, didn't really matter against Luton because they had that game plan. And, you know, they've lost balls in the air. And it's a tough one to take, but I just think there's so many different circumstances at play. Yes, Sunderland could have played better, but I can't really get too angry at them for it. I'm disappointed, don't get me wrong. It's good I'd started to think about Wembley, as we all do, but still immensely proud of them. And I think it's, as we mentioned earlier, it's been a fantastic season.
Yeah. Now, so you talk about the performance, John, and, you know, Sunderland did only have one shot on target in that game. And I think it was Jack Clark that, you know, it was quite a tame effort in the end. But while Sunderland probably did fall short of expectations in an offensive sense, they can probably also potentially feel a little bit hard done by again by some decisions that went against them, starting with a potential handball about, I think it was about 5 or 10 minutes inside of the first half. And it seems very 50-50 as to whether people think it was a handball, whether it wasn't, whether his arm's in a natural position, whether it wasn't. And again, it just comes back to this whole kind of debate as to what actually is the handball rule. You've got some people saying that VAR would give that in the Premier League. You've got some people saying it wouldn't. And there's just a lot of confusion as to what is a handball nowadays.
Yeah, it is, yeah. I think when I saw it on the telly, I was a little bit like, well, I can probably see why he's not giving it, because his arms are technically by his side, albeit, you know, a little bit out. But obviously our good friend Keith Hackett, the former Premier League ref, has said, you know, his arm is out and he's making himself bigger, which stops the ball. So it's one of those. I mean, you can see it either way. Obviously I'd be giving it. You have to wonder what the linesman's doing, because the linesman must be able to see that from the other side. But, you know, ultimately it wasn't given. It's just one of those things that you just have to, unless VAR's there, you have to sort of, you know, just accept it, albeit frustratingly.
Yeah. And as always, Michael, there was Coventry fans in our mentions after that game. And, you know, one of the pages replied saying, never handball, you're never going to get that. And then one of the fans replied under that tweet saying, if that was against us, I'd be quite pissed off if it wasn't given as a penalty. So, again, like I say, with handball, especially nowadays, it does come down to interpretation as opposed to a matter of fact. You know, you've got the offside rule, which is albeit sometimes very confusing, but pretty much black or white. You're either offside or you aren't. Whereas with the handball rule, it's, you know, is your arm in an unnatural position? Is it intentional? Is it from too close of a distance? Is he looking at the ball? This, that, and the other. There's so many like kind of grey areas to it, but should that have been given?
It's to use your own words, it's down to interpretation, isn't it? It's down to what you deem as a deliberate attempt to play the ball with your hand. It's a deliberate attempt to handball it, to sort of use that momentum to sort of stop a goal scoring chance for one way or another. For me, whether it should have been given, I think I'm in the camp that I can see why the ref didn't give it. But, you know, maybe this is the thing. I don't really like commenting on my opinions on decisions, and because on the one hand, you seem to get slated whether you think it is a penalty, whether you think it isn't a penalty. But yeah, maybe we should have been at that. I mean, what was the score at that point? Were we 1-0 down or was it 0-0?
It was 0-0, I think.
Well, then there you go. So if we get given that penalty, and albeit you have to score it, but if you get that penalty and you score it, then all of a sudden the game changes, doesn't it? It flips on its head and it's completely different. And then psychologically, from Luton's perspective, it's they've really got to go and chase for it now. They've got a 2-goal deficit overturned. But yeah, I mean, what more is there to say on referees? Like, you know, this is something that, yes, I accept refereeing's a hard job, but I'm just getting bored of complaining about them. Like, you know, something's got to be done about them. You've got to either give them help or actually give out punishments for lackluster decisions and performances. I mean, I'm sure Simon Hooper is who we had, and I'm pretty sure he was a Premier League referee at the weekend. So, I don't know. To answer your question, yeah, I think you could argue it probably should have been a penalty.
Yeah. And obviously there was a red card decision in the first leg that didn't go for us, James, as well. Marvellous Nakamba committed about 45 fouls in that first leg, 43 of which were already on a yellow card. He takes Jack Clark down. Most blatant foul I think you'll ever see. Doesn't get the second yellow. But there's also one in the second leg on, I think it's Carlton Morris. And I don't think it's, you know, it's not as game-changing as the handball decision would have been. But it's another one of them that you think, you know, if VAR looks at that in the Premier League, he went over the ball, almost stamped on Dan Neil's ankle. It's another questionable one that you look at and think, should that have went the other way?
Yeah, you always need luck in these big games. You need big decisions to go for you, and you've mentioned the three there that haven't gone Sunderland way. It's frustrating. Yes, I'm going to contradict myself slightly because, especially the penalty, probably would have changed the game, but I'm not convinced that it would have necessarily meant that Sunderland had gone through. It would have enhanced the chances, undoubtedly, but we don't have a crystal ball. It didn't get given at the end of the day. And I know I've given the lads a lot of excuses before about games played and the adversity that they've suffered, but I'm not really sure officiating was one in terms of their level of performance. If we're just concentrating on that, I think there's various things you can look at. For me, that the penalty one was a handball. I can see why it's not being given with all of those interpretations and with the linesman being on the far side and it all happening so quickly, and his arm is on sort of like the blind side of the referee, isn't it? So yeah. it's like, it's difficult. We can all see it because it's replayed 10 times in slow motion, and the pundits get good mileage out of it. I get good mileage out of it in my job, but it is a tough job. The standard is poor. Like, I don't think any of us would disagree. I think referees need more help. There needs to be more of them. It needs to be more professional. The atmosphere from the grassroots needs to be more conducive to referees. Whether, you know, us on podcasts and the media need to look at ourselves in that as well, possibly in some sections, although I don't think we've gone too hard on referees. We just rightly point out that sometimes there are mistakes, but mistakes happen in life. But I don't think that was necessarily the reason Sunderland lost the tie over two legs, although he should have definitely been sent off in that first leg. I don't know how he hasn't got a second yellow for that, to be honest, but you go again, don't you?
More impressed that it wasn't even given as a foul.
Yeah, I know, it's crackers. But this, you know, like an opposition fan could probably from Coventry or Middlesbrough or Wigan or somebody like that could probably sift through Sunderland's games and point to loads of decisions that have gone our way as well. And you tend to forget them maybe a little bit, those marginal ones that do go your way. because you remember the bad ones, you remember the negative things in life. So I'd like to say it evens itself out, but I'm not sure it does. I think that might
I'm not convinced it does. Yeah. We've had far more negative ones than positive ones.
I think that's a bit of a footballing cliche, but I don't see that as the reason that Sunderland lost. Maybe if it had happened in the 91st minute when Sunderland were chasing that equaliser overall, I might have thought I was a bit more annoyed about it. But yeah, I just think when it happened, I'm not convinced it would have made a difference in the end. Although I do accept it would have changed the game, but at the end of the day, it wasn't given, so.
Yeah, it is what it is. And of course, that did finish 3-2, which means Luton go through to the playoff final and Sunderland have another season in the Championship, which, you know, all things considered, is probably a good thing for the club, for the players involved. You know, it's another year of development. The players, you know, that are here and are going to stay here have got a year of Championship experience under the belt, probably more experience than was planned originally. But with the season finished now, John, it is very much less on the pitch stuff and all attention's turned to everything that happens off the pitch. And it's been less than, your math's not so good, but I think about 16 hours since the game kicked off last night. And, you know, the news of Mowbray, some players and this, that and the other have already emerged and will, you know, pretty much be a daily occurrence for the next few months until something gets said or something gets done, really. But in terms of where everyone stands on Mowbray, I think everyone is largely in the same boat. I think people realise what Mowbray's done, you know, what he's achieved this season. He's took us into the playoffs with, you know, pretty much everything against us. You know, like I said before, injuries, he's had to come in, you know, a quarter of the way through a season, no pre-season in terms of the way he wants to play. And, you know, you lose your captain, your striker, your other striker, all your defenders with already what is a very young, inexperienced squad. But with the talk of him going now, it's an interesting point of debate because at the same time, the club probably didn't appoint Tony Mowbray as the manager to take them up because I don't think anyone expected us to be where we are this season. But he's managed to get us, you know, to the second leg of a playoff semi-final. And all things considered, I think he deserves another shot at that.
Yeah, you're spot on. You know, we know the club have got, you know, this sort of 5-year plan to get into the Premier League. You know, but Mowbray coming in after the chaos of you know, Neil leaving. Like you say, he's steadied the ship. You know, he's got us playing some amazing football. You know, we haven't just consolidated, we've obviously kicked on. Maybe kicked on too much for what the club have maybe wanted. I know that sounds really strange. But like you said, with to do it in adversity with all those things happen, you know, it's a fantastic achievement, and you've got to say, you know, him and his team do deserve it. You know, he's found a way to play, you know, the shortest back three you'll probably ever see in the Championship. And yeah, all right, we lost, but they still, you know, dealt okay, you know, on the whole with what Luton, you know, obviously threw at us. You know, and we're talking about sort of 6'6" absolute brutes just, you know, hammering us. Yeah, you know, it's been a long season, but like we're saying, I think he's earned the right to be backed. And you know, you've got to think what could he do, you know, when he is actually properly backed and he's got three strikers, you know, and he can rest, you know, Roberts, and he can rest Clark, and we do have those players. You know, we've got fit centre backs, and you know, we can rotate those types of things. You've got to think what can Mowbray do? Yes, you know, they'll know and they'll want. You know, I think the plan is to get in, you know, a young, fresh idea, you know, sort of coach, you know, that looks the plan. But sometimes the plan has to go out the window because of what, you know, what you've achieved. And like you say, as soon as the game sort of finishes, you know, normally those types of rumours come out before the game, don't they? Before a big game with us. So it wasn't a surprise to see those things coming out, you know, really, really quickly. And it's never a dull moment for Sunderland, is it? You know, straight away it's, oh, well, these three coaches are lined up and Mowbray's lined up for this, and, you know, Mowbray's fighting for his job, and, you know, not that he has to fight for his job, but he's done a fantastic job. And, you know, I think Guy Mowbray said it on Twitter, you know, if he is fighting for his job, he should tell him to stick it. You know, it shouldn't be like that. He's earned the right to carry on, certainly from my perspective and from what a lot you know, of the consensus of the fan base. I don't speak for everybody, but, you know, from what I've seen, you know, he deserves that chance. And, you know, it's sometimes the plans just have to alter, and ultimately it's down to the club. You never know, are we going to go that way or are we going to go, you know, a different way? It's all up in the air. Lots of things to go on. Obviously, contracts need doing, and, you know, we're saying about big bids coming in for players. And like you said, it's all up in the air at the moment, and it's, you know, it's going to be an intriguing watch over the summer.
Yeah. And I'll come back to you, James, on this one. And obviously, it is a nice change, to be honest, to be talking about a manager potentially leaving because we want to improve on him, as opposed to, you know, Lee Johnson or someone like that who just hasn't done a good job here, because Mowbray has done an excellent job. And I know you said in the group chat earlier, can we get someone that is better than Mowbray? And I think the answer to that is yes. But the question I then pose to that is, will we get someone better than Mowbray? And that's the risk that Sunderland have to really consider if they are going to change it, because on paper, there might be a manager out there. And obviously, there's a few mentioned, none of which I'm going to try and pronounce the name because it's just not worth it. But, you know, on paper, they might look like a better option, but it's a very big risk to take, especially, you know, I think that the Salzburg manager, I think he's 35. I think he's only been in management a couple of years. And whilst he's done an excellent job in Austria, a job in the Championship with, you know, Sunderland, you'll have Coventry, you'll have, you know, potentially one of Borough or Luton, Southampton, Leicester. It's going to be one of the most competitive championships the league's seen in quite a long time. It's a big risk to take if they are to replace him.
It is a big risk, and I would slightly rephrase my question that I put to you a lot in the group chat earlier. I don't think it's necessarily about who can Sunderland get that's more exciting or better on paper than Tony Mowbray, but I would slightly rephrase it and say, is there somebody that can come in and do a better job with the tools at his disposal, who has the knowledge of the league, who has the experience, who has the knowledge of the area, who understands the football club, and whose face fits, whose character fits, who knows what to do, who's got the right approach. These are all questions way above my pay grade. I do think this is an absolutely fascinating story. You know, after last night, I expected to come into work this morning and to be writing about Luton Town. I'm not. It seems to have developed into a bit of a minor saga. I think there's so much to say about this. Personally, my view is I think Tony Mowbray should stay. I do understand this model that Sunderland are always evaluating, re-evaluating, tracking managers, tracking players on the off chance. There's contingency plans, if that's the right word. But at the end of the day, Tony Mowbray was brought in to replace Alex Neil on a two-year contract. If the plan was always to move Tony Mowbray on at the end of this season, then why give him that two-year deal? Perhaps he's a victim of his own success and that he's accelerated that club's five-year plan too fast, and now they're looking to move on to the next phase of that plan. But if Tony Mowbray has accelerated that plan so well, then surely he's earned the right to stay for the remainder of his contract and then perhaps look at it again. You know, who knows what Tony Mowbray could have achieved if he had Bath and Ballard fits. It's all if, buts and maybes, I know. But if he'd have been given another striker as well as Gelhardt in January, what if Ross Stewart hadn't got injured? There's all these different permutations and different things. As I say, I do understand the model, and I think it's completely acceptable for clubs to be looking at different managers these days. In fact, I think it's necessary, to be honest, for modern football, because it's so fast moving that you almost need to have your next managers and players lined up before the go.
Yeah, you don't want to be left behind.
No, you don't. But does that necessarily mean Mowbray should be allowed to leave or should go? I find the wording that he's fighting for his job, as I think it was John mentioned earlier, I do find that tough to swallow, because the bloke's been nothing but fantastic, just in every aspect. Just his handling of the players, his handling of the club. He's a very nice man in press conferences. And I don't mean sort of like patting you on the back and having a really good personal relationship with you. I just mean he's plighty, comes across well, he answers your questions. He just comes across as nice, and I think the players, you know, share that view. And this is a bit of a mad comparison, but if anybody's watched The Last Dance, which I think a lot of people did during lockdown, the Bulls had, I think, Doug Collins. I'm not an NBA connoisseur at all, by the way, so I'll probably get corrected, but the Dugs had, sorry, the Dugs, The Bulls had Doug Collins, who got the Bulls to the NBA playoffs, and Michael Jordan was playing well. I think he was a top point scorer in the NBA, and then they got rid of him, which took some balls, I think. But then they got Phil Jackson, who turned out to be one of the best NBA coaches ever. I think he won 6 NBA championships with the Bulls, and then God knows how many after with the LA Lakers, I think. But are Sunderland going to find a Phil Jackson type person? That I don't know. I don't know who they've got on the radar. One of the names that you were too scared to pronounce, Josh, that I'll go for is Gerhard Struber, the ex-Barnsley manager. He's been linked with Sunderland. He was actually pictured sitting alongside Kira Louis-Dreyfus against Birmingham City away. How much do you read into that? I don't know, because Kira Louis-Dreyfus was also pictured next to Ousmane Dembele of Barcelona. Tony Mowbray was pictured sat in the Stadium of Light box next to Stuart Harvey before when Alex Neil was still at the club. So you just don't know. It's just such a big story at the moment and a bit of a mess. There's also been reports coming out that Southampton have Tony Mowbray on their shortlist when they come down alongside Swansea City's Russell Martin. So it's an extremely big story. I do think that the club need to come out and give some sort of clarity soon, before we know this descend into a bit of madness and a bit of stupidity. Everybody has their opinions. A lot of these opinions are emotive. And I just think it's best for all parties if it's sooner rather than later. What I will say, if they do get rid of Tony Mowbray, it will be a big, big, big call. I personally wouldn't be in favour. I would understand it and support it and get behind the new man. But football is a very, very funny, funny business. We could lose the next 3 games of that, you know, the first 3 games of the next season with Tony Mowbray in charge and everybody's calling for his head. Or we could have Gerhard Struber. We could win the next 3 games of the championship season and everybody could be saying what a marvellous decision. Or it could be completely the other way around and you have Struber and lose the first 3 games and everyone's going, what on earth's happened? So these are the big calls that Louis-Dreyfus and Speakman are there to make. But yeah, I don't think as well that Tony Mowbray would have come out and said what he said last night if he'd been told his job was safe. Obviously, he clearly doesn't know what's happened, and those conversations, if they have happened, haven't been satisfactory to him. And they say there's no smoke without fire. This story doesn't seem to be going anywhere. In fact, it seems to be running and running. So strap in, I think, lads, to be honest.
Absolutely. And just very quickly, Michael, like James says there, if Mowbray is to go, if a new manager is to come in, or head coach, if you want to put it that way, and, you know, all the off-field kind of decisions that will be made before the next season, they have to be made pretty soon. You know, you don't want to be left behind. You don't want to be, you know, kind of scrambling around a week before the season, not knowing who your new head coach is going to be, not knowing if, you know, you're going to have a striker, this, that, and the other. I'm not saying we're going to sign 2 strikers by midnight, as much as I'd like that. It's not going to happen. But in terms of, you know, signings, in terms of appointing a new manager, if we're going to, or letting people know that Mowbray is going to be here for the season, it has to be done as quickly as possible.
There's a phrase where, you're right, we need to make sure that this is done as quickly as possible. But there's a phrase when you're looking to sign players, and it's, they have to be better than what you've got. Otherwise, what's the point? And that applies to me, my thoughts in this situation with Tony Mowbray. I think a couple of months ago, I was all for moving him on. This was before, I think it was after the Stoke game. I'm not saying because of that Stoke game, but we'd had like a run of 3 straight losses or whatever. Or even after the last international break, before this mental run that got us into the playoffs, I wasn't as convinced with Tony Mowbray beyond the end of this season. And even when he first came in, I thought he would be good enough to stabilise us and get us to the point where we're consolidating. But then the next season, look to move him on and get someone better in. Now, the challenge is, like James, like you both have said, is we get someone who's going to do a better job than what Mowbray's done this season. And we've got to remember as well, it depends on what the club want to do next season. What's with Speakman and Harvey and KLD and whatever? What's their ambition next season? What's their plan? For me, James has said, this is a massive, massive gamble. Mowbray, for me, with everything that's gone on to get us in the top 6, has got to be an unsung shout for manager of the season, which is why he shouldn't have the awards before the season finishes, by the way. But at the same time, it's a huge risk. There is definitely better out there. If it's someone who's better than Tony Mowbray and is going to really get us into the top 6 and give us a genuine shout of going up, then fair enough. I personally don't think Mowbray would have been good enough for the Premier League had we gone up, and I would have definitely looked to change it then. But for me, I'm with the same consensus. I think next season, if you give him a fair crack at the whip with more players, with strikers, with players fit, I'd love to see what he can do next season. I think he surely earned that right.
Yeah. Well, that is the end of that season. And unlike seasons in the past, it doesn't end with disappointment or frustration. Maybe a slight bit of frustration, but in a good way. So it does mean that Sunderland will be in the Championship again next year. We'll have everyone back fit. Ballard, Barr, Evans, hopefully Ross Stewart if he remains at the club. And obviously that's another situation that needs to be sorted pretty soon, because I think he's got a year left on his contract pretty much now. So quite a lot to keep your eye on for the next few weeks and next few months. And hopefully, like I say, things do get done quickly. We'll have a podcast out very soon in the coming week or so, just to go through the season as a whole, picking out the best goals, the best players, the best moments, all that kind of stuff, and a few bits and bobs here and there before the start of the next season. But until then, we will see you later. That's all, folks.